This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, February 12th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas asks Governor Beebe questions submitted by Arkansans. Plus, we talk to some organizers of Fayetteville Community Radio. The group has applied for a license to operate a low-power, non-commercial FM station.
And the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute plans to expand its offerings into Benton County. And we continue our monthly Three Things You Should Know series by discovering three things we should know about theater etiquette.
Those stories and more, but first, the Arkansas Legislature convened for the second day of the biennial fiscal session yesterday. Behind the scenes, lawmakers continue to plan possible changes to the state's private option expansion of Medicaid in an effort to make it more palatable to many of the state's conservatives. While House and Senate leaders say the health insurance program for low-income Arkansans will be reauthorized by the end of the session, House Majority Leader Bruce Westerman told reporters he doesn't see that happening.
From the conversation that I've had, I believe there are votes there to not pass the appropriation when it first comes out, and that we'll have to work on some kind of compromise, but I don't think the compromise will be on how to make the private option better, to change the private option, but a compromise on how we end the private option, setting a date and a pathway to do a controlled wind down of the private option.
House Speaker Davey Carter says there may have to be numerous changes to the private option to garner 3/4 support from both chambers.
There are 100 different ideas out there, so a lot of those type of things are getting discussed, and I'm not going to go into all the detail because those things are getting discussed now, but I have seen nothing that is a fundamental change of the nuts and bolts of the private option.
Potential changes include waiving a requirement to provide non-emergency transportation for program participants, tweaking policies on health savings accounts, and addressing disparities in physician specialist reimbursements.
Opponents of the Common Core educational standards ran into a roadblock yesterday. The Arkansas House Rules Committee tabled a proposal by Republican State Representative Randy Alexander to put a 3-year moratorium on implementing Common Core. He and other opponents say the standards are unproven guidelines for teaching and assessing K-12 students. Alexander says he was disappointed that the committee only considered fiscal legislation.
There's a process for having an exception to that if there's enough interest in doing it. And it's a big threshold. It takes 2/3 vote in the House and the Senate. But the House and the Senate's not even going to get a chance to vote on it now. And I just think that's wrong.
Alexander says Common Core loosens restrictions on collecting and sharing student data. And while it establishes higher standards for Arkansas, he says Arkansas could have looked to other states that already had better educational standards in place. Supporters of the policy say it provides consistent standards to ready students for college and the workplace.
The Washington County Sheriff's Office has officially unveiled the renovated space in its East Annex at the county campus. Monday evening, Washington County Justices of the Peace toured the 10,000-square-foot space. Sheriff Tim Helder says Sheriff's Office officials have been considering what to do with the space for about 5 years.
Along the way, we determined that we would move our entire enforcement division up into this area, which prior to this had just been basically a storage area. At one time, we'd had a fitness area in there for employees that we were able to move out into a different area and determined that this would be a much more efficient way for us to do our jobs, with investigations actually being in the same room, communicating, sharing information, and our patrol division also being there to have access to that information. It's really proven to be a great setup for us.
The spaces formerly occupied by the Enforcement and Investigation Divisions are being remodeled for use by the department's Detention and Transport Divisions. Helder says the main ideas behind the renovation project were enhancing operational efficiency and overall safety of the Sheriff's Office facility.
We've done our own in-house studies trying to figure out how to best utilize the space that we've been provided. And we felt like bringing our enforcement divisions together up here, then able to drift across with some of our bigger divisions within detention to fill in behind, is really much more efficient. The other thing, on a security note, we've always had our interview rooms on the enforcement side. So every time that an outside agency, for instance, needed to interview somebody that's in custody, they would bring them from the detention side into the soft side of the building. What I mean by that is it's less secure, it's sheetrock walls instead of cinder block. So it always created this potential problem.
He says two new interview rooms will be created on the detention side of the facility. Total cost for the just-completed renovation was less than $500,000, which is substantially less than the original estimated $800,000 price tag for the project.
Arkansas Forestry Commission pilot Jake Harrell was out searching for wildfires on January 31st when his plane went missing. Shortly after the discovery of the missing plane last night, Arkansas Forestry Commission officials announced that the pilot didn't survive. A partnership of more than 13 local, state, and national entities searched western Arkansas since the crash. Forestry Commission spokeswoman Adrienne Barnes says the search effort was unprecedented.
This is the largest search effort that's ever happened before in Arkansas. The location of his plane is extremely steep, nasty terrain.
Barnes says the cause of the plane crash and the details of the pilot's last moments are being investigated.
Benton County voters have rejected the creation of a rural ambulance district and an associated annual fee for residents of the county's unincorporated areas. Only county residents living in the proposed ambulance district were eligible to vote in the special election, and with only 17% of those registered voters turning out to the polls, 33%, or 1,134 voters, were in favor of the district, while 67%, or 2,346 voters, were opposed to the Emergency Medical Service District. County officials had hoped that attaching a fee to rural residents' property tax would solve the issue of requests for a higher level of compensation for operating costs from the cities. But with the proposal's defeat at the ballot box yesterday, the Quorum Court is expected to revisit the issue in the near future.
The new Arkansas Music Pavilion under construction in Rogers will be named the Walmart Amp after the retailer announced a $2.5 million gift to the Walton Arts Center yesterday for the outdoor concert venue. According to the CityWire, the gift includes additional capital support and services over the next 10 years to ensure success of the venture. The new amphitheater under construction in the Pinnacle Hills area will have an increased seating capacity of 7,000, greater lines of sight, air-conditioned restrooms, and the largest stage house in the state. Walmart's gift to the AMP is just the latest multi-million dollar contribution to the new facility, after the Willard and Pat Walker Charitable Foundation donated $2.5 million and John L. Hunt donated the land and gave a $3 million interest-free loan to the AMP.
Tonight, mostly clear with lows from 20 in northwest Arkansas to 25 in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow with highs from 56 to 59, and partly cloudy tomorrow night with lows from 29 to 33 degrees. This is Ozarks at Large. Recently, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas sat down with Governor Mike Beebe for a 30-minute wide-ranging conversation as he fielded questions from Arkansans via Twitter, Facebook, and email. With the legislative session opening earlier this week, one obvious place to start was by asking, does the private option save the state $89 million as advertised?
We actually already saved that money and gave it back to the taxpayers in the form of tax decreases. What happened was we were able, because of the private option, to reduce the amount of money we were spending in uncompensated care, to reduce money we were sending to UAMS, reduce money we were sending to organizations, moving some people that we were having to pay 30% on for straight Medicaid over to the private option, which we ended up having to pay 0% on. Mm-hmm. The combination of all those moves saved state general revenue in between $80 and $90 million. But the legislature said, you know, if we're going to save $80 or $90 million, let's give it back to the people. So we passed tax decreases in the last session that are graduated. But for the upcoming fiscal year, the amount of those tax decreases, the amount saved by taxpayers and cut from the budget, is between $80 and $90 million, about $86, $88, $89 million, depending on how the revenue flows. Mm-hmm. And so that money's already been spent by giving it back to the taxpayers. That money is no longer available in the budget. If you don't have the private option, then the money that you saved and the money that you otherwise have given back to the people and those folks that are now being paid for by the private option will no longer be paid that way. Theoretically, they'd go back to straight Medicaid and be paid on the basis of the 30%. And or those folks who were not being paid for uncompensated care because now they were getting paid for through the private option for the services that were being rendered will now have to be paid for those services. Where are you going to get that $89 million? That's how that works. But the private option created a reduction in what we were having to spend to the tune of between $80 and $90 million, and that money's already been spent in the form of tax relief.
It's earmarked, but the bulk of it
is
earmarked.
No, it's already been passed.
Some of it has. Right, but it hasn't been spent yet. It's in the fiscal 2015 budget, the tax cuts.
Yes, but when you reduce the revenue coming in based on those taxes and give it back in the form of tax relief, then that reduces the amount of money that the state would otherwise have received. And you've got to forecast that because we can't run a deficit.
Right. I'm just trying to be clear that the bulk of those tax cuts have not been, they're not in people's pockets yet, but they are earmarked
to be in people's pockets starting July 1st.
Right.
Part of them are already in people's pockets because part of them were implemented in the last fiscal year, a small amount, about $10 million, between $8 and $10 million. That goes up to between $86 and $89 million starting July 1st. And then in fiscal 2016, they did way more than I told them they should have done. It goes to $140 to $150 million in tax relief, tax cuts that take effect a year from July. So they got an even bigger problem.
But you did sign that into law.
I signed it into law, but I said they've got an opportunity to fix that next January.
Lots of discussion about the fate of the private option funding going into this next fiscal year. Kind of give me an assessment of where you think it stands at this point in time.
You know, it's like it was last time. It's close. Anytime you have to have 75%, these other states don't have to deal with a 75% requirement.
Right.
And if we had a 51%, if we had a majority requirement, this wouldn't even be a close question. If we had a 70% requirement, it wouldn't be a close question. But when you've got to get 75% in each house, that's 75 out of 100 House members, 27 out of 35 senators, that's tough to get for just about anything, much less something that might be controversial. And so the loss of one vote here or one vote there puts a lot of stuff in jeopardy or a lot of stuff in peril. So it's just like it was last time. It took three or four or five votes to get to 77 in the House. It took a lot of negotiation to get over 27 to get to 28 in the Senate. And so you got 28 out of 35 in the Senate last time, 77 out of 100 in the House. You lose one or two in the Senate, you got an issue. You lose one or two in the House, you got an issue. So it'll be just like it was last time. It'll be a close vote.
It appears that the Senate is where the battle is going to be, at least at this point in time, when you look at kind of the lay of the land. Am I inaccurate in that observation?
I think there's a battle everywhere.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, anytime you're dealing with those extraordinarily high numbers, because what happens is you can have a small majority of nine people that stop it. Mm-hmm. You can have an overwhelming majority of people for it and a small minority that might end up with like nine that could stop the whole thing.
It seems to have some popular opinion in polling that we have done. Would you consider taking it to the people if the legislature doesn't pass it?
No, I'll be gone. You're talking about an initiated act. Somebody might at some point, but I still believe in the legislative process. I still think the legislature is going to deal with logic and money and arithmetic, as I say, or as Clinton used to say. The ideology is one thing, and you can hate Obamacare and you can hate what they're doing in Washington. What Arkansas did in a bipartisan manner, Republicans and Democrats leading together, is to take something and make something better out of it. It's the alternative to the strict Obamacare. It's something different. And it's now being copied by Republican legislatures and Republican governors across the country, the most recent being Utah.
Fairly conservative state.
Fairly my foot. The governor of Utah said they want to do just what Arkansas did.
So here's a theory that's been advanced. Representative David Meeks was a guest on our Capitol View program this past weekend, and he said that he thought that the battle would be to potentially extend the funding in the fiscal session so that policy changes could be made in the regular legislative session in 2015. Do you think that that might be the bridge to get the votes that are needed, is to make some promises on policy changes? I know you won't be there.
I can't make promises I'm not going to be able to keep because I won't be there. But, you know, it's the reason they're having to do this again is one legislative year doesn't bind the next legislative year. So they're always free to make changes. They're always free to tweak or improve or do whatever they need to do to make things fit for the people of Arkansas. That option always exists and would exist whether there's an agreement or not.
So what's your strongest argument for people sitting on the fence or legislators who are opposed to re-upping the funding?
There's not one argument. There's a multiplicity of arguments. First of all, let's talk about the people. You're going to have, by the time they start voting on this, 100,000 people have got health care that never had health care before. These aren't deadbeats. These are working folks that work for people who do not carry insurance, and they don't make enough money to be able to have their own individual policies. These are people 19 to 64 years of age who traditionally are out there that just can't afford, or their employers don't provide health insurance. That's one aspect. Secondly, and a lot of people don't want to hear this, but you know, it's been documented across the country. It's estimated about $38 million is going to be the actual cost to businesses in Arkansas that would be saved if we do the private option. They won't have to pay those penalties under Obamacare. Thirdly, the hospitals are paying for this whether we take it or not. Under what they did in Washington, Medicare reimbursements for hospitals are reduced to help pay for Medicaid expansion, or in our case, to pay for the private option. So the hospitals are going to pay for it whether we take it or not. It's $28 million a year. That's each year just to UAMS alone, and that applies to every hospital. The two big Jonesboro hospitals, they said the $8 million estimate that we talked about that they would lose without this is a conservative estimate. There will be people laid off. There will be some small hospitals that may or may not make it as a result of this. Then there's also the issue of whether or not you want to pay for another state. You know, we're going to pay this. None of this is a free lunch. Arkansans are paying for it. Arkansas hospitals are paying for it. Arkansas businesses are paying for it, whether we take it or not. And I've used the analogy over and over, Roby. I think you've heard me use it, that it's like paying that 18 and a half cent a gallon federal gas tax that we pay every time we pump gas into our tank and saying we don't want our federal highway money back. Send ours to California, send it to New York. They need help with their highways. We're in great shape. Don't give us any of our tax money back. So there's not one reason. There's a ton of reasons why you ought to do this, not the least of which is the actual people.
That was Governor Mike Beebe speaking with Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas. You can see an extended version of this conversation at talkbusiness.net. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity, backed up with fuel diversity: coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. Their mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent anti-business legislation, regulation, and rules. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
Next time on Ask Me Another, our house musician Jonathan Colton has clearly been complimented one too many times for his musical trivia skills, because I think it's gone to his head.
Jonathan Colton, oh Johnny, 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 Jonathan Colton.
Join me, Ophira Eisenberg, and genius Jonathan Colton for NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia.
It's Ask Me Another, Saturdays at 11 a.m. on 91.3 FM.
Coming up in about 11 minutes on Ozarks, we learn more about the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute's plans to expand its offerings.
Members of OLLI typically are people that are just interested in learning things that maybe they missed when they were in college. Perhaps they never attended college, but they have a sincere interest in learning about the arts and humanities and history. And so they want to broaden their knowledge, but they don't want tests. They don't want to have to write a paper. They don't want to have to worry about grades. It's just love of learning, just for the sheer pleasure and enjoyment.
That's just ahead on Ozarks at Large.
Since 2001, we've followed the battle by community radio advocates to carve out tiny neighborhood broadcast niches on the FM dial, the domain of syndicated commercial and religious broadcast. Several years ago, the Federal Communications Commission opened up licensing opportunities for new independent, low-power, non-commercial FM stations. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, Fayetteville Community Radio is among several dozen applicants in Arkansas.
Nightbird Books, an independent bookstore on Dixon Street in downtown Fayetteville, is busy with patrons this evening, but soon, if everything works out, Fayetteville Community Radio will be beaming a 100-watt signal from a new rooftop antenna.
My name is Joe Newman. I've been helping organize this effort to get radio, low-power FM radio here in Fayetteville. I'm a computer software programmer by trade.
And the window to apply for a license was narrow. Organizations had 1 month last fall to electronically apply to the Federal Communications Commission for a permit, choosing from a small menu of available FM frequencies. The FCC created what is called an LPFM opportunities map, showing what channels were available in what regions. And to reduce competition, Fayetteville Community Radio worked out an agreement with two other groups vying for the 97.3 channel.
The groups that have applied are Fayetteville Community Radio, Puente de Paz, and the Art Experience. So there's only three of us, and we all have agreed to work in cooperation to get a station on 97.3. So it's a done deal, though we do have to wait for the FCC now to award the license to a particular group amongst us.
The FCC awards points to applicants if they've existed for at least 2 years, are committed to broadcasting at least 12 hours per day, and will provide 8 hours of locally produced content.
A community radio station is run by volunteers in the community, producing their own shows. A lot of the content of this station will be determined by the people who get involved and what they want to tell the community. They can have music to play, maybe music they just would like to hear on the local station, or they might be local musicians, could be authors and poets. Lots of groups in town would like to get their message out over the air. This will give them an opportunity to do so.
And Joe Newman expects the FCC to award an operating permit to their nonprofit umbrella, Omni Center for Peace, Justice, and Ecology.
And they're going to be the license holder of the station.
Omni is among several dozen in Arkansas who have applied for a LPFM license. LPFM stations are available to non-commercial educational entities and public safety and transportation organizations. Individuals, commercial operators, and media are barred from applying.
We have a mission statement. Would you like to hear that? Fayetteville Community Radio features locally produced programming and presents cultural, artistic, and political perspectives currently underrepresented in the media. Our goal is to inform and empower listeners to play an active role in our radio station and in the community. Our programming promotes equality, peace, sustainability, democracy, and social and economic justice.
After passage of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which allowed for cross-ownership of broadcast media, hundreds of community FM radio stations went off the air. To fix the problem, the FCC established the low-power FM radio service in 2000 to convey as many as 900 new LPFM licenses with multiple translators. Translators expand a signal's reach. Those spots were quickly consumed by right-wing and evangelical networks. Micro-broadcast interest groups, most notably the nonprofit Prometheus Radio Project, founded by former pirate radio producers, along with the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, lobbied the FCC to dismiss hundreds of those translators to make room, especially for culturally diverse community groups. which led to the passage of the Local Community Radio Act of 2010, which granted equal protection to community radio stations. Advocates say low-power FM stations will benefit both non-English-speaking and isolated rural communities. So what will Fayetteville Community Radio's call letters be? Station manager Joe Newman.
We'll just see how it goes. We don't really know.
Hopefully the door's open.
Oh, yeah. Didn't even think about it.
I didn't even think about it.
Robert and Lisa Sharp, who operate Nightbird Books, have offered a home to Fayetteville Community Radio. Joe Newman leads the way to an upper loft where the station control room will be built.
We will contribute to the utilities, but basically they're generously providing it rent-free.
Production studio will also be built at the Omni Center complex a few miles northeast of here, where radio production classes will be held.
And a little phrase we use sometimes is people should not just be media consumers, but they should know how to produce media.
Moshe Newmark will be a show producer. He previously hosted a reggae music show on KXUA, the University of Arkansas student radio station.
Very, very interested in community radio. I actually have worked in commercial radio and non-commercial radio for over 20 years, so it's very exciting to me.
But unlike a commercial FM station, this one will reach a limited number of over-the-air listeners.
If this was a flat area, I would say we would easily blanket the entire Fayetteville. But because of the terrain, there may be and will be some dead spots.
The station will fill any gaps via web streaming and podcasting.
We're looking at a budget to start with, a whopping $30,000, hopefully, to really get where we need to be to build this. And by the way, I don't know if this is appropriate to interject, but on March 16th, we're having our kickoff fundraiser at the Greenhouse Grill, and hopefully we'll raise a good portion of that money.
Fundraiser will include a silent auction, music, and food. Fayetteville Community Radio counts about 45 members, half which are active, and more than 600 supporters. An annual budget has not been established. The FCC received several thousand LPFM applications, far fewer than expected, broadcast analysts say. But station manager Joe Newman says new community stations plan to network to share best practices and support wider radio reform.
Well, besides our college radio station and NPR, the domination by corporate radio really limits what people can hear and do on the radio. So this could open up a new voice for a lot of people in a lot of communities.
Fayetteville Community Radio must comply with certain FCC rules, operate at least 36 hours per week, be open to the public 20 hours a week, keep a station log, air hourly station IDs, and maintain an emergency alert system. Fayetteville Community Radio also plans to have a generator in place to broadcast during power outages. LPFM stations are allowed to air certain types of syndicated programming, maintain a political file on candidate appearances, and observe FCC rules regarding obscene and indecent content. Unlike National Public Radio, which is ethically barred from advocacy journalism, content on Fayetteville Community Radio will skew towards the left of the political spectrum. Joe Newman.
Ideally, I'd like to be out on the streets. We had the Occupy movement, which was a big, big event for months here. And in some cities, and really led by other local community radio stations, there were people out there with them reporting on living with them in their tents and trying to get a real feel for what people were talking about and what was happening. And I think we have a great opportunity to do that.
Moshe Newmark is interested in creating a local talent showcase.
Just imagine local musicians getting their music out for the whole community to hear. People that have hobbies, people that are passionate about certain subjects, being able to talk about these things so that it's a real community sharing.
College student Olivia Hines is doing community outreach for the station.
I know that everyone has a voice and not many people are heard, and I'd like to reconnect my generation and the younger people back to radio so they can feel that their voice has power and they can tell their story and hear from others.
Fayetteville Community Radio, 97.3 FM, is looking for donations of vinyl and CDs to build a music library, as well as turntables, CD decks, microphones, and mixers. The station logo, a black broadcast tower held up by a translucent hand. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
A fundraiser to support construction of Fayetteville Community Radio is scheduled for 5 p.m. March 16th at Greenhouse Grill in Fayetteville. For more, you can visit facebook.com/community.radio.community.voice. It is Wednesday, February 12th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And joining us now is Becca Martin Brown, Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So do you have a Valentine's Day plan yet?
Not really. I just want nachos. And so
those are good.
The cleanse of January is over.
Right, exactly.
Get me some nachos. What about you?
Kinda.
I don't have to plan anything. Because I'm being taken to Austin for a birthday party.
Oh,
for
sure.
Part of his family, so I don't have to plan anything.
There you go.
Hey, I'm going to Austin with you. But if you need to plan something, here are some events going on Friday, which is the big day. There is a Valentine's Artsy Crafty program from 10 to noon at the Fayetteville Public Library. You can drop in and make Valentine's Day themed crafts for anyone in your family. That is free. There's a Valentine Crafternoon. I like that.
That's cute.
From 9 to 6 at the Miller Branch Library in Fort Smith. Again, you can make a craft and enjoy holiday sweets. There's a champagne and chocolate happy hour Friday night from 4 to 8 at Heartwood Gallery in Fayetteville.
It's up my alley.
And, of course, starting on Friday, Les Mis opens at Rogers Little Theater. There's a happy little Valentine's story. But they have, this is a cast of like 100. And they have been working their tails off for weeks. It's going to be amazing. And you need to call now for reservations because they're selling out. 631-8988.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This Week in This American Life.
It was about 6 o'clock in the morning, woken by knocking at the door. Consistent knocking, you know, the hard knocking. So I knew something.
He was a small business owner, had a young family, coached his kids' football team, church going.
They had AR-15 style machine-looking guns.
A regular guy.
I said, hey, man, you got the wrong person.
Except for one thing.
He said, no, you're the right person.
This Week.
Listen Sunday at 10 a.m. to 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at the University of Arkansas announced that it would be expanding its coursework offerings into Benton County. This expansion will be formally announced during an open house Friday from 2 to 4. The Bernard Osher Foundation started the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute in 2002 in California and Maine. With over 115 institutes in the United States and one in each state, it opened in Arkansas in 2007. The institute's focus on post-secondary education for those individuals over 50. It's projected that by 2015, 45% of the U.S. population will be over 50. I recently spoke with Susan Toneyman, director of the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, or OLLI, in her office on the northeast corner of the Fayetteville Square. Toneyman says that the institute's target community of those over 50 is an area of great need, including individuals that are self-assured, interested in the community, and have a love for learning.
When you get to the age of 50 or better, many people have done all of the college work they want to do. So people that are members of OLLI typically are people that are just interested in learning things that maybe they missed when they were in college. Perhaps they never attended college, but they have a sincere interest in learning about the arts and humanities and history. And so they want to broaden their knowledge, but they don't want tests. They don't want to have to write a paper. They don't want to have to worry about grades. It's just love of learning, just for the sheer pleasure and enjoyment.
There are no tests or requirements, though to take a course, one must be a member of OLLI. There's an annual fee, and most courses have a small tuition cost to cover any materials or the teacher's travel. There are over 13 subject areas with a variety of offerings within them. Toneyman says that diversity is something that draws Ollie's members.
And it covers everything from politics, history, the fine arts, theater, cooking, philosophy, just a wide range of topics. And in addition, we have lots of outdoor activities, too. In addition to the classes that Ollie holds, we have a lot of special interest groups, too, because people want to learn, but part of the benefits of being in Ollie is the socialization you get and the chance to explore cultural issues and interest with other people.
Groups include book clubs, beginning bridge, mahjong, genealogy, and more that meet on a regular basis, with Ollie acting as the facilitator. Of the members of Ollie, about 75% have relocated to Northwest Arkansas from other parts of the state, the country, and the world. This area being recognized nationally as an aging-friendly community. As such, Toneyman says Ollie finds that its members are very interested in learning about Arkansas history, culture, and getting the backstory. She says the popular course at the moment is Tree Identification of Arkansas. Rather than duplicate programming offered at other organizations in Northwest Arkansas, Ollie aims to add value.
So if we do a program, we might have a meal with it. We might do things called Dine and Discover. We will do things where we do lectures beforehand and then go to a theater production. So we want to add, again, the backstory to what we offer.
Upcoming special programs include an event at the Bogle Family Gardens in Bentonville and a talk by former Senator David Pryor. Many think that because of the affiliation with the University of Arkansas, teachers are professors. But that isn't the case. Though some may be retired professors, anyone can become a teacher as long as you are willing and have a subject matter expertise or extended interest in a topic.
For example, we have instructors like Mike Seipold, who is an aficionado for Northwest Arkansas train history, and he is truly a train buff. You know, we have a geophysicist who is retired, and he has particular subject matter expertise in Aborigines culture or in travel in particular areas.
Anita rose to expand courses after getting much feedback from current Ollie members who reside in Benton County. Many do not wish to or are not able to make the trek to Fayetteville.
One, we want to make adult learning available, accessible, affordable to as many individuals in Northwest Arkansas as possible. And so we've had requests from places in Bentonville and in Bella Vista for us to come.
As such, meetings began last fall to gather interests of members, with a Benton County committee being formed in Bella Vista to determine curriculum. Courses will be held at new partner organizations such as Bentonville Parks and Recreation and Bella Vista Village, with at least two dozen this spring semester. Other new partner organizations will be announced during Friday's open house. Other announcements can also be expected, including one that will aim to grow membership from the current 600 to 1,000. Growth is the word for Ollie in 2014 and is also the theme for Friday's open house, where attendees can expect to see artwork by Ollie members.
Either a growth that you might think of traditionally in plants and things like that, but also in our growth of knowledge. And so in ways we can grow as people. And in addition to the paintings, we will be having, we've got sculpture, we've got beadwork, we've got a variety of different kinds of multimedia art. So I think people will really enjoy coming to see what talented artists that we have in Northwest Arkansas, in addition to them being Ollie members.
Music will be played by Fayetteville harpist Brenda Cox, and hors d'oeuvres will be served. An Osher for Lifelong Learning Institute course catalog will be available, but classes will continue to be added as the programming expands both in Fayetteville and into Benton County. So check the Ollie website. It's olli.uark.edu for more information. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Tomorrow, the city of Lowell will host its fifth annual American Red Cross Blood Drive in memory of Hannah Grace Crumby. The four-year-old was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia in September of 2009 after having a low-grade fever for several days. She lost her fight with the disease just 2 months later. The upcoming blood drive is scheduled for 2 to 7 p.m. That's tomorrow at Lowell City Hall. The winter months can be a difficult time to collect blood donations due to inclement weather and seasonal illnesses. Eligible donors with all blood types are needed now to help restock the American Red Cross's shelves. There continues to be an urgent need for blood donors with type O, especially type O negative. Donors with types A negative and B negative are also urgently needed. You can visit redcrossblood.org for more information.
Our feathered friends will take center stage at Hobbs State Park Conservation Area during the second annual program series, Birds and Breakfast. Guests can come enjoy a cup of coffee or juice and have breakfast with the birds. From 9 to 11 a.m. for four Saturdays, the Wildlife Society of the University of Arkansas will be catching songbirds, handling these birds, and then releasing them back into the wild. Guests can learn about how this type of research has taught us many things we now know about birds. The four dates include this Saturday, March 1st, April 12th, and May 3rd. All activities are free and registration is not required. If you'd like more information, you can call 789-5000.
I got excited this morning, Antoinette, because I could kind of hear a few birds chirping.
Spring?
Hopefully. I don't know if it's going to be here yet, but I heard them.
I like it.
Yeah. A kickoff reception for the 2014 Upstream Art Project is scheduled for 5 to 7 this Saturday afternoon at the Fayetteville Underground. Project representatives and previous artists will be available to answer questions about upstream art and show off the previous year's arts. To those interested in taking part in this year's project, you should attend. There are 12 storm drains identified for this 2014 project. A committee will select designs from those submitted. I'm guessing that they have pictures of last year's art.
Most likely.
Since it's storm drains, right? Yeah. All designs for this year are asked to have the message drains to creek in English or Spanish somewhere in the art. The design may be tailored based on a specific location, or you can choose to do a more general design that could apply to any storm drain. If you're tailoring your design, please remember to mark that on the application. Each artist is challenged with incorporating the physical storm drain structures into their art piece. The general size of storm drains are 4 feet by 6 feet, but this will fluctuate. The deadline for applications is March 14th, and all art must be completed by May 20th. For an application packet, please email Jane at Jane, that's J-M-A-G-I-N-O-T, at uaex.edu, or call 444-1755.
The Greater Eureka Springs Chamber of Commerce will host the third annual Midwinter Hometown Jam at 7 o'clock Saturday night in the City Auditorium. This event will feature seven of the area's top local bands on the big stage. That includes the Aerials, the Sarah Hughes Band, Josh Jennings Band, the Medicine Man Show, SX Rex, Kevin Riddle, and Springbilly. These groups perform at various local venues and festivals throughout the year. On this particular evening, each band will perform a 20-minute set before they all join together for a jam session finale, which was a highlight of last year's show. Tickets are $12 at the door, and children under 12 will be admitted for free. Advance tickets can be purchased at the Chamber of Commerce Visitor Center in the Village at Pine Mountain for only $10. For more information, call 253-8737. This is Ozarks at Large. In the early 20th century, moviegoers would often see announcements on the screen about proper etiquette for the theater. These images would include phrases like, "Ladies, kindly remove your hats," or, "If annoyed when here, please tell the management." When being a part of the audience for the performing arts, the guidelines for proper behavior has changed over the years, and that has left modern-day audiences questioning how to react to the performers on stage. For example, audiences may have found themselves wondering when the appropriate time to clap is. In the latest installment of our monthly Three Things You Should Know series, we decided to find out three things we should know about theater etiquette. We enlisted the help of Beth Bobbitt, Public Relations Director for Walton Arts Center, who stopped by Studio 123 earlier this week. She says the first topic we need to address is children and the theater.
The question I get asked all the time is, what show or is this show appropriate for my child? And of course, there's no hard and fast rule for what is appropriate. But a couple things to keep in mind. We don't have a rating system. Mm-hmm. So we really try and provide all the content, you know, on the website or on the blog or on our Facebook page to let parents know exactly what's going to be in it. So will there be violence? Will there be language? And of course, we do have shows that are specifically for kids and families. And when that's the case, you know, we'll make sure and tell you that up front. We have a policy. So if it is appropriate for kids and family, the policy is that you can bring your children under two and they can sit on your lap and they don't need a ticket. And for all non-infant friendly shows, you do have to pay for even babies. So that's just a general rule of thumb.
Well, for the non-infant specific shows, the ones that aren't really geared towards kids, would you suggest more that people leave their children at home?
Well, I personally wouldn't. You know, I went to the theater when I was really young, when I was 5 or 6 years old. And I think that that sort of, you know, shaped my life and made me appreciate arts and culture and all of those wonderful things. So it could be a really magical experience if it's done well. On the flip side, it could be really, you know, kind of a disaster if a child isn't prepared. And because they're used to watching television, you know, or they're used to interacting with people. They don't understand that you have to sit quietly and watch the show unless they're explained these things. And so I think it's just all about, you know, preparing your kids and making sure they're mature enough for what they're about to see. And one series that I think is really good for older kids is our 10 by 10 series. And I say that because it's kind of an introduction to some of these fine arts, you know, like dance, theater, jazz, and the shows are just $10. So if you find that your child isn't connecting or isn't responding well, you can leave it intermission and you've only lost $10. So,
no harm in trying.
Yeah, something to think about.
What's the next thing we should know about theater etiquette?
The next thing. Courtesies. These are just sort of fun tips that a lot of people don't think about. Someone told me recently that the Walton Arts Center Theater is a little bit different in that we don't have a center aisle. Oh. So when you have to excuse yourself for whatever reason, you have to kind of
crawl over people.
And that can be annoying to some people. And so one thing that you can do to make it a little bit less inconvenient is to just face the people so that you can say excuse me or smile or just acknowledge, you know, that you're asking them to move. And so that's just a really small thing. Another thing is to wait for the cue at the end, the curtain call. And I think this is just more respectful for the artists and performers because that's their time to get the reward from the performance, you know. And that's their time to look out into the audience and connect and see how, you know, you as an audience member are responding to the show. And so it's just a really important thing to make sure and build that time in and know that, you know, you may have a little delay afterwards because of whatever reason, but that's part of the show.
And you talk about rewarding them for what they've done. That's something that I've had a question about. I know I've gone to shows and say if it's a Broadway musical, once they finish a number, there's often applause and that's okay, right?
Right. Yes, that's actually my next one is clapping or just audience response in general. And I'd say with Broadway shows, yeah, between scenes or between acts, it's totally appropriate to clap and let them know that you liked it. Where the area gets a little bit gray is with symphonies. So, of course, you've probably heard that, you know, sort of the traditional way of thinking is that you wait until You don't clap in between movements. You wait until the composition is over. I think those rules are relaxing a little bit more, and I don't want to give your listeners too specific of information regarding how they should respond.
Sure, sure.
But just know that it sort of depends on the conductor. It sort of depends on the format. And if you're like me and aren't sure, just kind of wait for your cue and see what your neighbors are doing. But it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be inspiring. And we want people to try new things. And we want this to be an approachable art form. So don't worry too much about the rules.
What about, I wondered this too, what about like dancing? I saw a company, Cuffy, a few weeks ago, and in between a specific act, you know, somebody may do a fantastic aerial thing and somebody would start giving applause. I'm like, can I do that?
I would say for dance, it's yes, you absolutely can. I think for a lot of people, they're so in awe that they forget to applaud. And, so it might feel a little awkward, but I don't think the performers mind it a bit. So I think that's totally appropriate.
Okay, good to know. So I can
and of course, yes, yes. And of course, contemporary, you know, music, hooping and hollering is totally encouraged as well. I mean, you know, we want people to respond when they're feeling joy and excitement, and it's all part of the theater experience.
And I think maybe you bring up a good point that, you know, you mentioned the rules are relaxing. I think maybe that's where some people aren't quite sure what to do, because maybe their grandparents took them to theater and it was very specific, you know, very proper, very, you know, very much more poised, and now things are starting to relax. For example, you know, people used to always dress up to go to the theater, and that's not necessarily a requirement. You can.
Right. Good point. Yes. And there's no dress code, of course. People do tend to dress up a little bit more for the symphony and for Broadway shows. But in general, you know, we want people to be comfortable. We want people to feel like they're sitting at home and just focused on the show and not worried about how they should act or what they should wear.
And what's the third thing
we
should know?
The third thing is just general policies. And these are things that most people do know. For instance, put your cell phones away. Most shows do not allow pictures or or recording, but occasionally they do. And so we will let you know in the curtain speech usually what the rules are. Latecomers, we, you know, attempt to begin all performances on time. And sometimes the companies have really specific rules. If people show up late, we have to escort them in after the first act. So just know that and be aware and make sure you allow enough time. And then the last thing I wanted to mention, because it's on people's minds, is inclement weather policy. We've actually never really had one in the past. Our exchange policy is just generally you have to let us know 24 hours. If something comes up and you can't make a show, we want to try and get you into another show. But with this winter being what it was, we had to really take a look at that policy. And so we are a little bit more flexible. We understand that if winter weather arises the day of and it's impossible for you to get to the theater, we want to make sure that we can get you into another show if that's possible, if our contracts or the artists allow that. So we've loosened up that exchange policy a little bit, and we have a great box office staff. So if you're ever in question, just feel free to call and ask. Those are basically it. I would just say in general, remember that you're in a room full of other people, and again, we want you to be comfortable, but at the same time, courteous, and so hopefully that was helpful.
That was Beth Bobbitt, Public Relations Director for Walton Art Center. She stopped by KUAF earlier this week. If you want to practice your newfound knowledge about proper theater etiquette at an upcoming performance, you can visit waltonartcenter.org for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Bella Vista.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And one more quick note before we end today's show. The Ozark Blues Society of Northwest Arkansas has announced the headlining music acts for the 12th Annual Blues in the Natural State Music Festival. That's scheduled for April 3rd through the 5th. The lineup includes the Royal Southern Brotherhood, Tab Benoit, and Steve Pryor, and also Samantha Fish. We're going to end today's show with a song from Samantha. It's called Leaving Kind. It's from her 2013 album, Black Wind Howlin'. Christina will be back tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large with her co-host, Kyle Kellums.
That's right. But until then, Thank you for listening and have a good Wednesday.